S&A Investor Radio looks beyond the regular headlines heard on mainstream financial media to bring you unscripted interviews and breaking commentary direct from Wall Street, right to you on Main Street.
How's it going out there? It's Wednesday, January 2nd. I'm Frank Curzio, host of the S&A Investor Podcast, where I break down the headlines and tell you what's really moving these markets. It's a new year. Hope everybody had a wonderful holiday. My family had a great Christmas. My kids, you try not to spoil them. You know, you buy them like three, four gifts. The next thing you know, you have your grandparents buying them three or four gifts. My neighbors have, you know, great neighbors. A lot of older people live in the neighborhood. And, you know, sometimes their grandkids don't see them that much and their kids and stuff like that. So what do? They spoil my kids. They buy them three or four gifts and have a sister or brother. They're buying them gifts. Next thing you know, they have like 15, 20 gifts. And they're opening them up and they're not even looking at what the gifts are. And they go to the next one. Every year we say the same thing. We're not going to spoil them. We don't buy them as many gifts, and we tell everybody not to buy them as many gifts, but everybody buys them gifts, which I guess is pretty cool. Some people say, well, you know, you spoil them. That's not good for the future, you know, and I hear you. But you know what? It's hard not to when other people are buying them gifts and everything, and I got some pretty cool kids, so hopefully it doesn't go to their head. Otherwise, I'm going to have to beat them. No, I didn't say that publicly. Just if you do nowadays. I was actually watching Superman the other day. And I don't know if you remember when the girl got the cat stuck in the tree and Superman came down and saved it. And the girl ran into the house and the mother said, stop lying, and smacked her. And I was like, wow, if that was today, it would be like all over the internet. I can't believe that's allowed or whatever. I don't know. Just kind of funny. But a few trends this holiday season I want to talk about. Almost every toy that my kids opened was a piece of garbage. I mean, my daughter got a Barbie car. The mirrors fall off. You got like this little race car, a little racetrack that doesn't really work. And they bought a Lego set with a table that's pretty good for my 2.5-year-old. And there's like 15 Lego pieces in it. They open up this 15, maybe enough to build one side of a house. So, you know, of course they want to get you. They want to buy as many Lego pieces as possible. But how do you give them a Lego set with hardly any Legos? I mean, just pure quality toys out there, which is probably the first time I've seen that since I've had kids. And, you know, I have a 5-year-old, so I'd say 5 years. And even when I bought toys for, you know, my nieces and nephews. But poor quality, amazing. You know, maybe people are cutting back costs. They're doing everything they can to meet earnings. I mean, really, you're providing what, 15 Lego pieces for a Lego set? Really? I mean, you're really cutting costs? Just like potato chips, right? I mean, it's like a handful in there now. The bag is like 10% full. It used to be 40%, 30%, 20%. Now there's like six chips in there. I mean, think about it. You know, it sounds crazy. It sounds funny. But these companies are doing everything they can in their power to keep the, you know, costs down. Because their earnings, the bigger picture. Also, you're looking at retailers. I think retailers could be in big trouble. I mean, the early data is bad. We're getting it. We're seeing a little pullback in retailers now. We're going to get more of that data later in a couple weeks. But the weather was really bad across the country. And usually I hate when retailers blame weather. But this could be significant because I ordered presents for my wife and also my kids on Amazon 6 days before Christmas. And I'll tell you why it was 6 days. We have a lot of stuff going on right now. I'm going to bring up later in the podcast. But they said, you know, I'm a prime person, prime client we pay. So, you know, we get free shipping. It's 2 days and everything's cool. And, you know, they sent me an email. Hey, you know, you're going to get in 2 days. It was fine. But then it was like, you know, it's delayed because of weather. And they said, you're going to get it in 4 days. Then Amazon emailed me and said, you might get them after Christmas. And then I really got ticked off. I'm like, really? I'm not going to get you know, you got to let me know at least a couple of days so I can run out. So, you know, I'm getting my wife something to open on Christmas. So luckily, it did come Christmas Eve in the afternoon. And I was able, you know, to wrap the gifts and everything was fine. But I don't know how it was for everybody else. Because I know my wife went to Target on Black Friday. Went there early, ordered a gift. If you have kids, you're going to know what Doc McStuffing is. It's one of the hottest toys, and she ordered it. It wasn't a problem. They said, you know, we're out of them now, but, you know, order it. And again, you're talking about how many days ago? Over a month ago almost, right? And 3 days before Christmas, they said, sorry, we're not going to be able to do it. We can't fill this order. And you couldn't let us know like a week later because then we'd had 3-4 weeks to get the present for our daughter. So, you know, just certain things that I'm seeing. I don't know if you're affected. Send me an email at curzio@stansberryresearch.com. But I think Christmas is really, really difficult for a lot of these retails. A lot of stuff was done online this year. Online is increasing by what? High double-digit percentage, maybe like 17, 18, 20%, you know, people doing more Christmas shopping online. But if you're not delivering quick enough, which may have happened this year, hey, I tell you one thing, if Amazon didn't get my presents here on time, I would have never, ever shopped on Amazon at Christmas time for the rest of my life. I mean that. That's how ticked off I was. I would have never did it. I would have been like, fine, I'll go out 3 weeks before, I'll go to Walmart. That's what I thought. Maybe that's good news for Walmart. I don't know. But I want to listen to your stories as well. FKersierStansburyResearch.com. But two trends I'd worry about. One, the quality of toys weren't that good. And also, you know, even getting your gifts on time. I think we're going to have trouble with the retailers. A sector that's what? Been up how long? I mean, since 2010 without much interruption. Most of these companies, 52-week highs, ETFs are 52-week highs. A little bit of dent now, so you know we'll see what happens with the retails. But I think you're going to see a pretty big pullback in at least some of them. Maybe it's temporary, but finally you'll see separation within some of these companies where not all of them are going to go up at the same time. Started seeing that in the last quarter, last two quarters. Not all the retailers are going up. Not all the companies in each sector is going up at the same time. There's individuals that are outperforming. That's good for stock pickers. Anyway, this is another special podcast. It's kind of slow week. Going to have one interview and then make a few comments about something really important. My interview is with my residential bear, and that's Rich Suttmeyer. Rich is a chief market strategist at valueengine.com. Also a great analyst. I talk about stocks, sectors that he likes, and also his prediction for 2013. Let's jump right into that interview with my close friend, Rich Suttmeyer. So Rich, 90% of the time I talk to you, you're bearish. Markets now close to the highs, but we do have fiscal cliff concerns. What do you see in 2013 in terms of equity prices?
I see that the upside is limited. In other words, we may not take out the 2012 highs, and certainly for the indices that did not get back to the 07 highs, we won't see those. So therefore, I'm a seller on strength. And I see downside risk that could look like what we had at the end of 08 going into 09, but maybe not quite that low, but a similar pattern.
So you're saying, so basically you're saying we have what, basically low single digit upside, but you're looking at more than 15-20% downside.
That's correct. At more than 20%. In other words, bear market territory.
Now, what do you think is going to lead us to the downside here? I mean, you do have the fiscal cliff concerns. We do see earnings, you know, topping out here. I mean, you know, low single digit growth expected for earnings, which is the slowest growth we've seen in a very long time on an annual basis. But what's the catalyst here to be pushed down 20 to 30%? I mean, is it valuations?
It's part valuation. Stocks are not cheap. From a fundamental standpoint, our value models show, you know, 12 of 16 sectors overvalued and five of them by double-digit percentages, and we have to reverse that to have fundamentals enough to merit value buying, so to speak. And the technicals are not positive. They're not negative yet, but they certainly are showing some negative divergences. So it's coming from both the fundamental side and a technical side. We need this market cheap in order to have a bottom. And because I don't think the economic climate and falling off the cliff, whether it's kicking a can down the road or actually going to the sequentation, whatever you say that word, I can't even say it sometimes, that we have a problem in the economy. And clearly the consumer confidence reading we saw this morning points in that direction.
Well, now, when you look at valuations, and I do too, and we're analysts, you know, you want to make an apples-to-apples comparison, and you want to compare to historical times, maybe when the economy was growing at 2 to 3%, where P/E ratio is supposed to be, and maybe say, you know what, something's expensive or cheap. But could you look at this times and say you can't really get an apples-to-apples comparison because you have the Fed in the market right now, really in the market, saying interest rates are going to be low forever? Well, you know, at least 3 to 5 years. You also have them, you know, basically bragging about how they bailed out the auto industry. It seems like if there's anything that's going to go wrong, we're going to have our government, we're going to have the Fed there for us. It just makes me think when you're talking about a 20% plus decline, it makes me see QE 4, 5, and 6. Does that factor into your analysis? Because for me, I agree with you. I think 2013 is going to be a pretty good year, not in terms of the indices. I think you're going to have opportunities to buy individual stocks because there's so much volatility. But for a 20-30% decline, I just feel like the Fed's really going to get involved right away because they, you know, they've had their hands in the markets for, you know, for the past 3-4 years.
Well, I mean, my opinion, QE1 didn't work, QE2 didn't work, QE3 didn't work, QE4. You know, we can't even get back to the QE3 highs at the QE4 was announced. So that's telling me that the market's tired of seeing QEs, particularly since it's not helping the fundamentals. And as the technicals deteriorate, you have a ball game of let's probe the downside because these QEs haven't worked. And, you know, I'm a very anti-Bernanke guy, as you know, and I don't think he's done a very good job. But unfortunately, we're going to have him at least until January of 14, and maybe he'll retire. That might be a good thing.
Well, what about the global landscape? I mean, we basically, over the past year, got no help from Asia. Europe was a disaster. Asia was a disaster. I mean, are you seeing these markets getting a lot worse? Or even if they stabilize, it seems like it's going to be a positive. It seems like, you know, when you come to Europe, of course, there's a lot more problems in there. But it looks like, you know, the destruction of the euro is at least off the table for a while. That, you know, a lot of austerity measures to be being taken place. And also, it seems like China at 7.5% growth. I mean, who knows if they're lying about the numbers or not, but I just can't see China at 5% without their government doing anything, which, by the way, I just want to make it clear that, you know, I'm trying to state things that are going to happen. It's not that I agree with them or not agree with them. I just think if China actually sees lower than 7% growth, the government's really going to jump in to do anything they can to stimulate the markets, and that's usually good for stocks. I mean, are you looking at that as well? And again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with you.
Well, I'm not a big fan of Americans putting their money in Europe or in Asia or any of the other things because there's so many choices that we have in the United States. So I really don't focus on economies outside the United States only from what I read from other people. So I don't really study it myself. I want to be an expert on the U.S. capital markets and investments here at home. You know, and I look at the improved housing market, for example, and I don't think that's sustainable in 2013 as well, because that's really the only engine that we have sputtering here in the second half of 2012, but I don't think it can hold up in 2013.
Now, why do you think that, too? Because you know more about housing than a lot of people out there. I mean, you study all statistics, FDIC. I mean, there's a lot of people that claim they're experts on housing. But you're looking at the housing market, and it's not good right now. But not good is good. It was so depressed in 2008. I mean, we saw a massive collapse, probably a little bit more to the downside than we expected. So we're just seeing, you know, a minor rebound turn into pretty good. We're seeing prices rise in most major markets. Why do you see that not continuing in the future? Because it seems like a momentum thing and a confidence thing, and it seems like we're heading in the right direction on housing. Still not a great market, but you're saying you think it could reverse?
No, yeah, I mean, I'm talking mainly about the home builder stocks, which certainly have been the best performing stocks in 2012 by a mile. Yet, you know, look at the P.E. ratios of these stocks. They're mid double digits on a lot of them when they should be single digits. And that's a big worry. Instead of buying the home builders below market to book value, or we're paying almost two times book value for some of them. And their cash flow isn't all that great in here. It's just better than what it was. But better than what it was isn't good enough if someone can't get a mortgage at the right rate. And if prices of homes keep going up the way they're doing it, they're going to be priced out of the market again.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. And I just did some analysis on this with the home builders, just to bring the you know, some of the listeners in here. The ETF is trading the ETF. So it's a basket of all the home builders, not the main ETF where it has like Home Depot. I'm just talking about the home. There's a home builder ETF. I think it's ITB. I'm not too sure. I just did research on this. But anyway, it was trading at 27 times earnings. So you're going to have a lot of companies in there trading 30, 35 times earnings. So if you're looking for a better housing play, and I don't know if you agree with this, Rich, I think you know, the chemical companies, because not only do they have a lot of things tied to building materials, but they're also seeing the raw material costs come down tremendously. And some of these companies, like the home builders, are trading at 52-week highs, but they're still at very low valuations, lower than the average S&P 500 company. And I still think you're going to get a lot of tailwinds in terms of lower costs, which natural gas and natural gas liquids. So I think the chemical companies are a lot better than home builders. But yeah, the home builders just are really crazy expensive right now. But you know, overall, if you're looking outside the home builders, the housing industry in general, I mean, what do you see in the housing industry, which is tied to what? Chemicals? It's tied to so many different things, so many different products. And, you know, it's just an economic bellwether. What do you see in terms of, you know, the macro picture of housing, not just the home builders?
Well, I think there has been some improvement. A lot of sentiment numbers have improved. And you look at the home builder sentiment index, yeah, it's getting close to the neutral 50, but it still is below 50. But the benchmark that they compare that to is single-family home sales, or housing starts, rather, and that has that declined in the latest month. So there's a pull now between better building sentiment, yet not a follow-through with regard to housing starts, single-family. And I look at it from those macro pictures. And also the mortgage market is very tough, and there's still too many construction and development loans out there so that builders who want to build inventory can't get the money to do it, Frank. So I think there's both from the community bank perspective, which is still struggling, and homeowners who would love to sell their existing home but can't to buy a new home, therefore they can't. We're going to reach a saturation point given current economic conditions. And then if we fall off the cliff, that just makes it even tougher for the housing market to continue to show their improvements.
Once again, we're talking to my buddy, Rich Suttmeyer. He's a chief market strategist at ValueEngine.com. Real quick, Rich, because I want to continue this conversation. If someone wants to get a hold of you, learn more about you, how could they do that?
Well, via email, it's R. Suttmeyer. S as in Sam, UTTMEIER at gmail.com. Or you can go to valueengine.com, and that's with one E in the middle for Value Engine. And, you know, you'll see my face and click through. You know what I'm saying?
Is that a good thing if they see your face? Because I'm glad I'm doing radio this
week. Well, actually, Frank, I got to change the pictures because I've lost 60 pounds this year.
Did you really?
And I haven't updated the pictures on the website, so.
Oh, congratulations. I got to say, when I do this podcast, I get that sometimes because we have StansberryRadio.com, and we have the pictures of our guests up there. And when I have to tell you, so many people have come to me and said, don't use that picture. Don't use that. And, you know, and I think about it. It's funny because I tell them all the same thing. 98% of my listeners, they really don't care what you look like. They care what you say. I mean, so
exactly.
It's so funny, you know, and people just like, no, you got to change that picture. And it's so funny because I always laugh and I'm like, all right, I'll change it. But it actually, you know, my personal, I really want to come out and say, really? Come on, man. You know, and I just.
And there's one other place now where I'm doing a lot of work, and I'm, you know, because I contribute to thestreet.com. I do a story every day. That's another place you get some interesting ideas of my thinking for the day. This week, for example, I was talking about the consumer staples stocks and how, you know, they're tumbling. And also I've been tracking what I call retail bubble stocks because I think the retailers that didn't deserve to see all-time highs in 2012, not given the plight of the consumer. So there's a lot of themes that people can pick up on in my columns on thestreet.com.
Yeah, and if you look at the retailers, I mean, they've had a tremendous run, and now we're seeing a little bit of dent in their armor where they're coming out with, you know, not so good results, at least early on. We'll see a lot of those results officially in, you know, retail sales in probably in a week or so. But I want to talk something else that you know, because I definitely agree with consumer staples, and we're looking at retailers definitely overvalued. Talk to me about financials. Again, something else that you're very familiar with, that you're great at analyzing. You're talking about home builders being trading 2x book. I've seen, you know, they're trading, even some individuals are trading 3-4x book. When you're looking at the financials, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, trading below book. We all know that, you know, on the regulation front, it's going to be real difficult. We know interest rates are low, so, you know, the net margins aren't too great. But, yeah, it seems like all this is priced in, and, you know, they have that momentum behind them, where in 2012 they're rising a little bit. What do you see in 2013? I mean, is this an expensive sector to you on some metric?
Yeah, I you know, they're kind of undervalued, but and they have the right risk. All this fundamental stuff does not factor in the FDIC data, the regulations, and the need to raise capital, and what are we going to do with these bad loans that are still off balance sheet. What are we going to do with this $225 trillion of notional amount of derivative contracts? We have not chopped enough wood off the non-current loans that are in the banking system. And if you get an economic slowdown, it makes it harder to do.
It does make it harder to do. But also, if you're looking at delinquency rates, aren't they low even when you're looking at municipals and everything? I mean, you know, we had that big scare and we had, you know, Meredith Whitney come out. It turned out that, you know, she was pretty much dead wrong. She'd been right on other things. But, you know, you're looking at delinquency rates and people that aren't paying their loans. And it seems like they're lower than they've ever been right now. So you think, which is a possibility, that if we do have a slower economy, that could lead to more trouble.
Well, I think the FDIC is allowing the banks to keep other non-current loans current. In other words, they would be non-current, but they're allowing them to kick the can down the road. And the other real estate owned is still very high. So there's still a lot of potential inventory coming out as that OREO starts being sold. I think if you count Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the banking system, you might have as much as $150 billion worth of property that has to come out for sale at some point. And they've just slowed it down in hopes of some of these mortgage programs that the government's trying to do actually help. But, you know, I think there's going to be more of a trickle-down of showing some pickup in these defaults and foreclosures in 2013.
You see, Rich, this is kind of what ticks me off a little bit as an analyst, because I was talking to you in 2008. I've known you for a very long time, but in 2008, before really the crap hit the fan, a lot of banks, you were on my podcast back then at thestreet.com, and you're telling me, Frank, these banks won't survive. They're not going to make it. They just won't make it based on the data. And you turned out to be, you know, right. And but then the Fed stepped in, and now you're saying it again. You're saying, well, you know, some of these loans should be delinquent, but you know, the Fed's in there. And that leads me to my question. When, you know, you're talking about a 20% decline, and also as an analyst, which makes it very difficult for us. I mean, we've seen some of the biggest hedge fund managers in the world go on CNBC, and they're, instead of talking about numbers, they're talking about the government, just like you are. So you know, it kind of ticks me off that, okay, this is what's supposed to happen, but since the government is involved in this, and especially in the banks, and I'm like, no, this is okay. We'll keep this on the books even longer. Everything will be fine. Isn't that telling you that, you know, we might not see a big decline, especially in financials, because, you know, the Fed is just so involved, the government's so involved in these companies, to the point, as analysts, it's getting difficult to analyze these companies because you have to take into that consideration where maybe it's not a risk that these guys get killed anymore because the government's going to be in there to step in.
Well, I think if we fall off the cliff, and we have all these regulations come on that they're just going to be fighting over all these regulations and exactly all the details of it, I think the only game for the banking system is the Fed. And the Fed is out of bullets. They're pushing on a string. There's going to be a I give up phase to this whole thing. And you shake it all out, and it just turns to a negative psychology, Frank. A negative psychology comes in. This isn't working. This isn't working. It hasn't worked. And so they give up. You follow?
No, I definitely follow.
Frustrating. Credit standards tighter and tighter. Mm-hmm. You're talking about FHA raising fees to borrowers, Fannie Mae raising fees. If you make it harder to get a loan, not easier to get a loan. I mean, I tried to refinance to get this 3.35 30-year fixed rate mortgage. It's next to impossible to do it if you're making all your payments. They find out reasons, they tack on fees, and they make it so it's not possible for you to do it.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, even, you know, I've just got something from my bank, which is Wells Fargo, saying, you know, hey, you know, your interest rate is lower. I did the same thing with my mom, but it's funny because my mom's older, obviously, and you know, she's over 70. So, you know, they actually refinanced her loan, made her pay the closing costs. And she didn't talk to me at all about this. She never wants to bother me about finance things for some reason. And they wind up giving her another 30-year loan when she only had like 17 years left on a loan, and she could have paid it off as it is. And I'm like, why did they make her take out an even longer loan? So you also have to be careful, because not only are they going lower interest rates, but they're not doing it in your favor, because instead of lowering the years and maybe changing a loan from 30 to 15 years, and maybe you make a little bit of a higher payment, but not as much interest payments over the long time over the loan. Now, my mom, who's about 70, being realistic, I mean, a 30-year loan at 70, I'm like, really? You know, I don't know. You just got to be careful with the banks out there, too. It's not just that they're sending you those letters that say, just like you said, you know, sometimes it's difficult. But if they are going to restructure, it's going to be in their favor, not yours, right?
Yeah, I mean, even on a small business loan, they're raising the banks are raising the rate differential from the funds rate in terms of what they charge a small business. So you want small business to borrow. They don't know what the tax rules are. They don't know what Obamacare is. And then the banks are raising the rates. So why would they want to expand? They can't do it. And that's what kills the economy from the Main Street USA.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Well, I want, and one last topic I want to get to, and unfortunately for you, I want to end on a positive note, because every time I talk to you, you give me the negatives, and I love it. I want to end positive, because at the beginning you said, I believe it was, 12 out of 16 sectors are overvalued. Let's go into the four sectors that are undervalued. Give me something that you like here.
There's nothing undervalued enough, Frank. They're undervalued by maybe 2%, that kind of thing.
Which sectors are we talking about?
But right now, if I was to pick an area, and that would be buy gold stocks, because they've lagged gold so much. Gold's not rallying. Yet the gold stocks are right now. So I think that's one play to take advantage of.
So you mean buy gold stocks, because gold is pretty up, but the gold stocks haven't really come up, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like the one I have in my model portfolio is Newmont Mines.
Which is, yeah, and a lot of these gold companies have gotten crushed. So anything that, so you have money on the sideline. Are you waiting for a pullback and then, you know, you'll jump in? I mean, what are some of the things that?
Yeah,
well,
I'm waiting for the valuations to be right. Or you're waiting for a quick down hit on a company that you like, because you have a buy and trade strategy. You have a level at which you can buy it and want to buy it because you think it can make 3 to 5%. You take your 3 to 5% and you say thank you and you wait for the next opportunity.
Well, one last thing here. What are you seeing in small caps? Because I agree with you where I'm seeing a lot, especially large caps. I'm seeing a lot of large caps overvalued, extremely overvalued based on, you know, compared to historical. You know, you're looking at the Walmarts and you're looking at the Procter & Gambles. A lot of these companies are trading at very high valuations. Even the Coca-Colas and McDonald's, 16, 17 times forward earnings. What about small caps? Because like you said, you're waiting patiently. And forget about the averages. I'm talking about individual stocks. Like a company I talked about, Dendrion, was trading at, you know, a risky stock. It was trading at $4. And, you know, it just came down to a level where, you know, it's trading below when Provenge, their signature drug, got approved by the FDA. And in just a couple of weeks, the stock jumped to like $5.20. I've seen that, you know, we're able to make a lot of good trades in my newsletter, Small Stock Specialist, this year. But I'm just seeing tremendous, tremendous opportunities to the point where there's just so many disconnects. Because let's face it, people hate stocks right now. You got the fiscal cliff. You got a lot of concerns, Europe, whatever. And they just seem to run away from stocks, especially from small caps. And news that would normally push them down 5, 10% is pushing these stocks down 30%. I'm seeing that a lot in small caps. I want to see if you're seeing that as well in some individual names.
My observation, and I'll call it stocks trading under $10 a share, because I've been doing a column a day on the equities.com website, and I pick out a little industry group or a sector, and I profile stocks that are trading under 10. And what I've noticed is about 50% or more were above 10 and some significantly above 10 in 2007, 2008, and there's more and more of them that have been crashing and burning to be stocks under 10 here in 2011, 2012. And that's the observation that I have. You know, I was looking at solar stocks, and you know those. Some of those were way above 50, maybe way above 100 back in 2007, 2008. And, you know, fortunately for Value Engine subscribers, they've had strong sell ratings for quite a while. So I've noticed that it's going to be very hard to pick the small cap stock as well, because there's just, you know, if the economy goes down, it's very hard to find the right idea in this environment. And I think you're right to try and find it in biotech, though.
Yeah, I think biotech is a pretty good area. It has a lot of tailwinds in terms of a lot of patents coming offline for a lot of larger companies. And they have to – people don't understand that patent cliff. I mean, they read about it. They don't understand where – you know, I've done research on it where it's something like $320 billion from now over the next 6 years that they're going to lose in sales, which accounts for some of these companies 30, 40% of their sales. The only way to get this back is basically through acquisitions, and I think it's really good for biotechs here. But – yeah, Rich, I want to just thank you for coming on the podcast late in the year. I just want to say, you know, I wish you a great 2013. I tried to get something positive out of you at the end, and I just couldn't. So I'm a little disappointed, pal.
Buy gold. How's that? That's a little positive.
Yeah, you see people telling you to buy gold.
Buy gold stocks. I'm not saying gold. I'd rather buy gold stocks.
I hear you. Well, listen, have a great new year, pal, and I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. As always, you're a friend, and I know you'll join us again soon.
And to you. Have a great year.
All right. Take care, bud.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, great stuff from Rich Suttmeyer. Rich is what, you know, you look up the definition of a permabear, and Rich's picture is there. His new picture where he lost weight is there. Rich is not really, you know, I don't know, he's not really too positive on the markets, but I like talking to Rich a lot. Because he puts things in perspective, especially for me. I think 2013 is going to be a good year for some individual stocks. It could be a little difficult depending on fiscal cliff concerns, what we're going to see on earnings. I don't see a recession on the horizon. But, you know, there's a lot of ifs. You know, it's going to be a tough market next year. And I like talking to Rich because he puts things in perspective and he looks at the numbers. He doesn't guess. But also, Rich, I think if the market went down 30%, I think if I had him on a podcast, he'd say it's going down another 30%. Because he's kind of like my dad. My dad was like that too. He's always skeptical. But I really like Rich. He's a great analyst. And, you know, he's given me some great ideas. I know he's given a lot of people out there some good ideas. So email me in, fcurgio@stansberryresearch.com. Rich is a good friend of mine. I like him a lot. And I hope the best for him in 2013. So now I'm going to end on this. And I don't want you to be sad about this story because I have a much bigger point. And please do not send me any emails. I'm asking you not to send me any emails on this. And I mean it. Okay, I'm sure you have more important things to do with your time. But 3 weeks ago, you know, it's been a little bit of a tough time in my life. And I, you know, I get personal on a podcast and everybody knows everything about me. That's just the way I am because I feel like, you know, I don't know. I feel like everyone's my friend here. I get a ton of emails. But my wife went to the doctor and got a mammogram. And, you know, it turned out that, you know, she had to go for a biopsy. They thought they found something. She didn't have a lump. She was going, you know, she's 40 going over, you know, regular test. And it turns out that they found something there. And when they further pull it out, they were probably just going to say, hey, you know, we thought it was just going to say everything's okay. But it turns out she has DCIS, which is an early form of cancer. And not all doctors classify DCIS as cancer. Some of them say, you know, well, it's not cancer, but it is a very early stage cancer. Nothing to worry about. You have a lot of different options. Anyway, I'm not, you know, I don't want to end this on, you know, a sad note. But the reason why I'm telling you this is because 2 years ago, my wife got something called Mirena. And it's an IUD, something that's put into, you know, uterus. And it's a form of birth control. And you say, well, why wouldn't you use, you know, birth control pills and everything? One is she can't take birth control pills. And two is, you know, we were at the age where, you know, she's kind of old and we're both old. I don't mean old. I mean old to have kids. And but we weren't sure maybe, we'll squeeze another one there. Maybe we'll have one more. We were thinking about it and just seeing how things went with our lives. So, you know, she didn't get her tube ties. I didn't get anything done with me, which I have no problem doing as well because I am 40. So, you know, we found, you know, we did a lot of research on this and her doctor suggested it and said, you know, this is something that, you know, could work. It's a form birth control pill and, you know, it'd just be a little bit better. So anyway, the Mirena basically releases small amounts of estrogen, which is hormones. And for me and my wife, I really believe that this was the cause for her getting early stage breast cancer. So the reason why I'm having this segment, and it's always about stocks and everything, but I'm just doing this really quick. Is because if anybody else has this, I would be careful. I mean, I'm not suing anybody. I have no appointment to make, you know, anything. It's just my wife has, you know, no history. Her family has no history of breast cancer. And it's a pretty big history because her mom has 5 sisters. They all had at least 2 daughters. So even her grandmother's going back. Nobody has breast cancer. They don't even have that much cancer in their family, even at an older age. You know, it was just funny how, you know, that's really detected as something, hey, you know, it's hereditary. And, you know, this is the only thing I could think of that provided major change. And for 40 years old and to find this, it's very rare. Usually this happens, you know, at an older age, you know, just going for a regular mammogram or, you know, sometimes they find a lump in your chest, you know, when you're 50 or older. So, you know, even when we go into a doctor's office, we're by far like 10, 15 years, you know, younger than everybody there. So I really do think that the Mirena had a lot to do with this. Again, I'm not saying it to sue anybody. I'm just trying to bring awareness to it. And I know based on my emails, probably 15% of my listeners are women to this podcast. Even the men that are listeners, if you know people like that, just be very, very careful. There's no facts to provide this. If you go on the internet, there's a lot of rumors and everything. I'm just saying from my experience, this was the only major change that we ever did with my wife, because she does, you know, everyone has cancer cells in their body, but something triggers them. And that was the only thing really that we did different. And there's nothing hereditary for breast cancer. She'd be the first one. So, you know, I'm just saying for everybody to be careful. I don't want to bring the story up to get any emails, please. I know you guys got better things to do, which is perfectly fine. I have no problems. But I just wanted to bring that up a little bit. So the past 3 weeks have been a little bit tough for us, and I've been running around a lot, doing a lot of things. So, you know, I think, you know, it's funny because I always say, hey, guys, you know, send me criticism, whatever. And I got, for some reason, like 2 weeks ago, I got four people telling me about criticism. Frank, your accent, or slow down when you talk, and this and that. And I ripped everybody apart because I wasn't in a good mood. I'm usually in a good mood, so I apologize to rip you apart. I mean, you know, give me the benefit of the doubt a little bit on that. But it was kind of funny because I didn't want to hear anything from anybody. So right now might not be a good time to get, you know, to be honest with me. But anyway, it was kind of funny. So I just want to tell you guys, you know, if you can't say a prayer, we're doing okay and everything. But seriously, the main reason why I'm telling you this story is, one, I feel like all my listeners are my family. And second of all, I just want you guys to be aware of something, because we chose that alternative. We did a lot of research on it, thought it was safe. I just have a feeling the fact that it emits estrogen, the Mirena, you know, small amounts of estrogen, I think this had something to do to trigger that. I really do. So, you know, again, I'm not saying it because I'm suing anybody. I'm not saying it because I'm making money off anything. I'm just saying, just be careful if that's the option, if your wife, if your parent, whatever it is, if you know whoever it is that has it, just be a little careful, because that's something that I wanted to tell you guys about. Anyway. Again, I didn't want to end on a terrible note and depressing story. Be happy. We caught it very, very early. We're very optimistic. Everything's going to be fine. We just have like another surgery, a little bit of radiation. Everything's going to be cool. So we did find it as early as possible as you could find it. So we're very happy about that. But anyway, I'm wishing everyone a great new year. Looking forward to 2013. Also, thank you, because I'm getting a ton of new subscribers off of basically two promotions that we're doing. One is it's $50, less than $50 to get my newsletter for the year. We're still extending that because we're getting in not hundreds, but I think, you know, probably, you know, thousands of subscribers to this when you include the internet and off of this podcast, which is fantastic, because I want everybody to really get an opportunity to buy some of these small caps that I'm seeing that I think are incredibly cheap, and you're getting some really good deals there. Also, Matt Battial is running a special as well. His newsletter's on sale for $39 for the year. So I've got a ton of emails. Say, Frank, sign me up for both. I'm going to extend that as far as I can because we're getting so many subscribers. If you're not into the newsletters and just into this podcast, that's cool. No problem. But I just want to extend those offers because I'm still getting them. And people that listen to the podcast where, you know, they've been gone for a month. Frank, is that offer still there? It's still there for you guys for a couple more weeks. So take advantage if you can, because those are the cheapest that we offer them. But if you want those, just send me an email. You're not going to find it anywhere on the site. It's the number one email that I get. Everyone says, Frank, I went to, you know, Stansberry website, Stansberry Research. I can't find it anywhere. You're not going to find it anywhere. You're only going to find it on the podcast. So email me to get it, fcursey@stansberryresearch.com. I follow you as somebody to take care of you in 2 seconds. You'll be on probably within an hour or two from the time you send me an email. You'll have access to all the research. So if you want that, fcursey@stansberryresearch.com. Also, thank you. The SNA podcast was number one again last week on iTunes, most listened to on the business section. That's because of all my listeners, because of you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and it always humbles me that so many people listen to this podcast and let me into your lives, which is really, really cool. So thank you very much. Also, please visit our website, stansberryradio.com, which is also for you. Guys, you know, you get the transcripts and everything. You can see the pictures of the people. I don't know if that's good or bad if you see the pictures of the people. Apparently, some of the people that I interview think it's good or bad whether you see their picture, but I don't. Anyway, but you can get a lot of stuff, a lot of feedback, all the stuff you need on that website, stansberryradio.com. And any questions or comments, please send them to me at cursey@stansberryresearch.com. But happy new year to everybody. Have a great, great 2013. And I'll see you in 7 days. Take care.
The information presented on SNA Investor Radio is the opinion of its hosts and guests. You should not base your investment decisions solely on this broadcast. Remember, it's your money and your responsibility.
S&A Investor Radio is produced by Stansberry & Associates Investment Research, the leader in investment newsletters.